Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and deadly myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to understand what is actually occurring behind the headlines, all while holding, predicting how these events that are presented therein will shape our world over the next 10 to 15 years. We want to hold the perpetrators accountable. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His is the lone reliable voice in what has become an exceedingly disingenuous world. Our phone number for those who would like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 2 hours on any topic, 877-300-7645. Excuse me. This story came from the L.A. Times. It was published about a week ago, but it is just fascinating. It falls right at the crosshairs of what I have been sharing about Spygate for some time. A reporter recently asked the National Security Agency's chief, this would be James Clapper. Actually, he's the National Security Director, I guess. But he asked the National Security Agency, the NSA's agencies, a chief but blunt question. Why can't he come up with a better example of a terrorism plot foiled through the bulk collection of U.S. phone records? Now, remember Dianne Feinstein, who is chairwoman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. So she is kind of at the pinnacle of those responsible for all of these spying apparati. She came out justifying the collection of documents on Americans through wiretaps, through keystroke entries on the internet. And she had one example. And we spent better part of a week digging into the example that she gave. It was David Headley. And what we found was that David Headley was not an example of a benefit of this program. As a matter of fact, David Headley had absolutely nothing to do with the PRISM program, which is keystrokes on the internet, or the Verizon program, which is the confiscation of cell phone conversations and all data surrounding those conversations. We found that Snowden was actually an agent of the U.S. government, that the U.S. government had employed him, a two-time convicted drug dealer, importer of heroin from Pakistan, and that we had deployed him to work on our behalf to infiltrate the one of the terrorist organizations in Pakistan and to be a go-between between the Pakistani government, its version of the CIA, its ISI, and that terrorist organization. So we were paying him. He was on our payroll. He wasn't dug up from some elaborate broad net spying network. And what we've determined is we went through the evidence. Much of it is in the public domain. In fact, all of it now is in the public domain. Google David Headley and see what you find. We spent a week reporting on what we found. We also found that both of David Headley's wives had independently gone to the FBI and had disclosed that David Headley was plotting to commit a terrorist act in Mumbai, India, and they named the specific hotels and other facilities that he and the Islamic terrorists in association with Pakistan's government, the ISI, were going to bomb, were going to attack. And they had detailed information on it. And the person that they brought it to was James Clapper, who is in the center of this Spygate storm, having risen to power since that time. And he said, no, there's nothing to this. We want to bury this information. So the old-fashioned way, wives who were beaten I don't know if that's old-fashioned, but certainly wives who are beaten go to the FBI and say, my husband is about to commit a terrorist act. You can stop it. And the United States did nothing. We didn't report it to India. The terrorist attack occurred. Nearly 200 people were killed. And we claimed that that was a success for this NSA broad-based spying on Americans. That's just stunning. So here's a reporter, probably hadn't done that investigation, but says, you know, Dianne Feinstein struck out. Why don't you come up with a case where all of this invasion of the privacy of U.S. citizens, this breach of the Fourth Amendment, come up with an example. Tell us why this is worthwhile. Why should we be spending billions of dollars to have our rights usurped? Nothing. Oh, I can't say nothing. They said within weeks they disclosed that the NSA had been collecting and storing this data and that the NSA director Keith Alexander and other officials have cited one case. So, Dianne Feinstein, she had her case. Turned out to be a case where the U.S. should have been discredited around the world because of what we had done. We were aiding and abetting the terrorist act that took place in Mumbai, India. Well, the billions of dollars that we have spent infringing on Americans' rights and angering every country around the world, well, it allegedly found a man who we think lives in San Diego may have sent $8,500 to militants in Somalia. Okay. So that's spectacular. It's kind of like the way that we began in the Afghan war. We sent hundreds of $250,000, $250,000, sometimes upwards of $2 million, depending on the sophistication, cruise missiles after Muslims living in tents riding camels. You know, we could have spent on average $10 million destroying $300 tents and a half a dozen camels. So here our great success story is that we didn't stop a terrorist plot in America. Al-Shabaab, the terrorist organization in Somalia, the fundamentalist Islamic group, they're not killing Americans. They're not threatening Americans. And oh, by the way, every one of these terrorist organizations, including Hezbollah, has a charitable outreach. Yeah, they're savages. But they also try, just like the United States does, to bribe popular support. So they provide food, clothing, that sort of thing. And all we did by spending billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars, is that we found a man who had already sent $8,500 to Somalia. We didn't even stop him from doing it. Although intelligence officials and White House officials continue to defend the mass data collection, support has clearly eroded among the public and in Congress. That's only partially true in Congress. That's a story we'll bring you in just a moment. A coalition of libertarians and on the right and civil liberties advocates on the left came 6 votes short of passing an amendment in the House last week to curtail the bulk collection of phone records. Even Representative Mike Rogers, a Republican from Michigan, and Senator Dianne Feinstein, I couldn't tell the truth if my life depended on it, the House and Senate Intelligence Committee leaders who have defended the NSA's collection of phone records since the program was disclosed, are among those who concede the changes will probably have to be made. Why changes? Window dressing. We don't want to be... We have no issue, by the way, in breaching the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. We have no issue in that at all. We have no issue with spying on Americans. Keep them at bay because they're the enemy. We just don't want to be caught doing it. And so, yeah, we'll probably have to make some changes so that it isn't as obvious that we're doing it. The shift in public opinion about the government's data collection efforts is clear. A Pew Research Center survey released on Friday of last week asked Americans whether they were more concerned that government programs, which were designed to combat terrorism, were going too far in endangering civil liberties, or that they were not going far enough in leaving the country unprotected. For the first time, the Pew began asking this question in 2004. Americans, 47%, said their greater concern was the threat to their civil liberties. Only 35% worried the programs don't go far enough. I tell you what, I don't know what's wrong with the 35% of you that think that your government's spying on you is protecting you from terrorism. But, you know, you ought not be voting. You're not smart enough. You know, somewhere along the range, if you're that stupid, you ought not express an opinion. It's better to be quiet and seem stupid than it is to open your mouth and remove all doubt. As recently as 2010, only a third of Americans said that they worried about their government's anti-terrorism efforts. They went being going too far. So, in 3 years, as a direct result of Snowden's courage, we have Americans going from 33% to 47% saying that the government has gone too far. And that's also with the massive WikiLeaks opportunity to recognize that our government has gone too far that preceded this. Even with all of that, we've gone from 33% to 47%. Most Americans are comatose. They're easy to fleece. They're easy to control because they don't care that they're being fleeced and controlled. It's just not in them to invest the time to learn the truth. And I suspect that even if they were to learn the truth, I'm not certain that most Americans have the capacity to render good judgment on the facts and know that the government is working against them, not for them. It reminds me of everything that's associated with Yahweh's Torah. Most people don't read it. Most people don't care. And I guess even if they were to read it, they don't have the moral compunction to process what it says. Continuing with this story about this change in America, their perceptions in the last 3 years, from only about a third of Americans recognizing that their government was spying on them and infringing their rights and was actually acting in a counterproductive manner as it relates to protecting American liberty, from 33% to 47%. The journalist who wrote this article says that in large part may reflect the passage of time and the fading of the intense emotions generated after the September 2001 attacks. So people's opinions are shaded by their emotions. They're not shaded by the evidence. They aren't shaded by reason. No, it's intense emotions that are the wellspring of people's opinions. And that may well be true, that what we have today is people thinking they're entitled to their opinion and the opinions being shaded by their emotions, by their religion, by their politics, but not by evidence and reason. And then so long as we remain a people who are not influenced by evidence and reason, who aren't even willing to investigate the evidence, and have been conditioned by their education not to view that evidence judgmentally, then we are going to be the easiest people in the world to fleece and control. Welcome to Animal Farm. Welcome to Brave New World. We brought it on ourselves. This article then goes on to say, but much of the shift seems to be attributable to Snowden's disclosure, the resulting debate, and the difficulty that the Intelligence Commission officials have had in convincing the public that their vast and expensive data collection efforts are actually accomplishing much. They haven't shown that it's accomplished anything. Nothing. They've got this billion-dollar apparatus to spy on Americans, and they can't show that it's accomplished anything. And what it has done is made enemies of countries that were considered our friends, and even more vicious enemies of those who were not prone to like this in the first place. And all we do is pound our chest and threaten to put economic boycotts on any nation that harbors the man who gave us this tremendous gift. I mean, it's like we're running for the Bully and Belligerent Nation Award for the world. The government has not done a good job of justifying it, said Fred Kate, a privacy law expert and law professor at Indiana University. Well, thank you, Professor. I'm glad you got your PhD to tell us that. I leave open the possibility that there are cases they can't talk about. It's also possible that an entirely worthless program has been perpetrated upon us. Let's face it, a lot of government investments are completely worthless. There you go. If the government were to curtail the collection of telephone data or drop it entirely, the rollback would not be unprecedented. In 2011, according to Snowden's disclosure, the intelligence agencies quietly discontinued a then-secret program that collected email metadata on Americans, to and from information, not content, because it wasn't yielding much value. U.S. intelligence officials insist that the telephone program is different. They collect and store domestic records of telephone calls, they say, so that they never repeat what happened on September 11th. You know, that is such a farce. And anybody that says that really should be smacked. I mean, just a slap across the mouth. Not injure it, not trying to promote violence here, but just a wake-up call. Don't say stupid stuff like that. You know, the fact is, with 9/11, we knew exactly what was going to happen, how it was going to happen, who was going to do what to whom 5 years before the 9/11 attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. And the U.S. government did nothing about it. Yes, Scott?
At the very least, you should wash their mouth out with soap.
At the very least. You know, and we knew it. We were given the information. In fact, we knew that the information was credible. Because before the attacks, we had the man who planned 9/11 in custody. His name is Ramzi Youssef. We had convicted him for the first bombing of the World Trade Center. And he told us that that would not be the last bombing of the World Trade Center. And his computer in the Philippines, where he detailed every aspect of 9/11, was the contents of that were in the possession of the United States and the FBI. And the FBI has never acknowledged it. We didn't suffer 9/11 because we didn't spy on Americans. These programs would have made no difference whatsoever towards stopping 9/11. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yetta. We are considering the story that are associated with everything related to our collection of data and the ability to process it, whether or not we are, as a nation, being reasonable, whether or not we recognize that our government is actually being counterproductive, spying on us because they know that, and have reason to be paranoid, that the more that is known about them, the less trusted they become. And if they're not trusted, people are less willing to give up their tax money to them, less willing to be patriotic, less willing to salute them and go along with the propaganda that the military is providing their freedoms and that the first responders are there to serve them and that their politicians are striving to make life better for them. The more that is known about them, the more vulnerable they become. That's the reason why Bradley Manning was convicted. It's the reason why the U.S. government wants to hunt down and incarcerate Snowden, is because the more that is known about them, that the whole case with WikiLeaks, the more you know about your government, the less patriotic and political you'll be. And they know it. So they don't want people to have this kind of information. So as we look at this issue, one of the things that strikes us is that even now the U.S. government is providing declassifying the documents that explain the very programs that Snowden released. And you have to ask yourself, now, if Snowden is going to be hunted down and tried for releasing this information, why is it now that in open congressional hearings, the directors of the national intelligence agencies are releasing them? That we're providing far more detail now into these spying programs than Snowden ever did. You know, the national director of the U.S. director, I should say, of national intelligence released three classified documents yesterday that explained the bulk collection of phone data. One of the secret surveillance programs revealed by NSA contractor Edward Snowden. The declassification, he said, was made in the interest of transparency. So if he does it, it's not a crime. When he lied to the U.S. Senate, to Congress, and said we weren't doing this previously, that was not a crime. But when Snowden simply says, here's proof that these things are happening, that is a crime. Together, the new round of disclosure shed even more light on the scope of the United States government's secret programs, and they all of which we began to see a glimmer of through the Snowden releases. The Office of the Director of National Intelligence released the documents in a 32-page report, which explains the mining program of Internet browsing information that is vacuuming up 150 network sites around the world. So what all Snowden said is, you know, that you've got a program called PRISM. Here's proof of it. And you've got a program on wiretapping. Here's proof of it on Verizon. And now the Office of National Security Intelligence is saying, oh, it's not limited to a handful of Internet sites. No, it's 150 Internet sites around the world that we're mining this data from. And the phone confiscation of information isn't just limited to Verizon. Yeah, we had Leahy, I think, was a Democrat, come out yesterday and say, you know, that everything that we make public, you know, our enemies can read too. And, oh boy, it's going to really make us more vulnerable to share this information. Well, first of all, most Islamic terrorists don't spend time reading U.S. documents. And those who are actually operating in a manner that you could call them affiliated with an enemy other than just Islam don't communicate using the Internet. They don't communicate using cell phones. They haven't in a very long time because long time prior to 2001, the United States made its surveillance of these kinds of activities known. We talked about Internet chatter. We talked about our NSA capabilities. There was nothing new released here other than it's now being applied to Americans as opposed to just internationally. News on the Snowden front, however, is that Moscow Russia has decided to grant him temporary asylum. Now, my guess is that this occurred because of the U.S. Senate vote, which was unanimous, saying that any country, including Russia, that offers him asylum, we would impose unilateral economic sanctions on. And Putin doesn't like to be threatened. So my guess is it was the very Senate vote that caused Russia to finally say, you know, if that's what you're going to do, if that's your attitude on all of this, then I'm going to grant him asylum. And he did. He's been granted 1 year asylum, go any place he wants to in Russia. And all done because of our belligerence. Now, this is an interesting story. It was sent to me by a good friend, longtime listener. It reads, the numbers tell the story in votes and in dollars. On Wednesday, the House voted 217 to 205 not to rein in the NSA's spying dragnet. It turns out that those 270 no voters that says, no, we don't want to stop this program, particularly the phone aspect of it that has shown absolutely no benefit whatsoever and is an absolute unequivocal breach of the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. 217 congressmen, when they voted on this, well, those 217 received twice as much campaign financing from the defense and intelligence industry as the 205 who said, we need to stop this. Did you catch that? Money. The 217 who voted that we should continue to spy on Americans and their use of their telephones received twice as much money, campaign financing, from defense and intelligence industries than did the 205 who said, you know, this is wrong, we ought to stop it. That's the upshot of a new analysis by MapLight, a Berkeley-based nonprofit that performed the inquiry at Wired's request. The investigation shows that defense cash was a better predictor of a member's vote than the Amish amendment, than the party affiliation. The House members who voted to continue the massive phone call-in metadata spy program on average ranked in the 122% for money from defense contractors than those who voted to dismantle it. Overall, political action committees and their employees from defense and intelligence firms such as Lockheed Martin, Boeing, United Technologies, Honeywell, and others ponied up $13 million in donations for a two-year period ending December 31, according to the analysis which MapLight performed while financing data from Open Secrets. Lawmakers who voted to continue the NSA Dragnet surveillance program averaged $41,635 from the pot, whereas House members who voted to repeal the authority of the NSA averaged $18,765. You know, when we have people bribing congressmen and senators to vote a certain way, you just kiss it goodbye. It's over. You have absolutely no chance of having Congress do the right thing when they're voting for measures that would cause those who make donations to their campaign continue to donate, because money is the mother's milk of politics. 41,000. Now, you might say 41,600 bucks, no big deal. Well, it is a big deal in congressional elections. They were bribed. They bought their vote. Of the top 10 money getters from the defense and intelligence community, only one House member, Representative Jim Moran, a Democrat from Virginia, voted to end the program. So the best predictor, the best indicator as to how a politician was going to vote for this infringement of the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution was how much money they received in campaign donations from the Defense and Intelligence Committee. This comment then is, quote, how can we trust legislators to vote in the public interest when they are dependent on the industry's campaign funding to get elected? Our broken money and politics system forces lawmakers into a conflict of the conflict of interest between the lawmakers' voters and their donors, said Daniel Newman of MapLight. He's the president and founder. The Guardian newspaper disclosure that the phone metaspying conditions were taking place last month by the leaked documents of former NSA contractor Edward Snowden is what brought this to a head, so that they had now to vote on whether or not, this was the Amish Amendment, that we continue it, we continue to breach our vow to uphold the U.S. Constitution, or we continue to spy on Americans. The House voted, as I said, 215 to 217. Defeated, and by the way, the Senate will vote overwhelmingly in favor to continue it, without a single shred of evidence that it did any good. And it was attached to an amendment. It was an amendment attached to the $600 billion Department of Defense Appropriation Act, which Hagel was bemoaning that was going to cut the size of his military. Well, I got to tell you, America can no longer afford a military. We are bankrupt. Long ago, we crossed the divide, which says we can no longer afford a military. The amendment, which was proposed by Justin Amash, a Republican for Michigan, received a fraction of the money from the defense industry compared to the top earners. For example, Amash got only $1,400, ranking him in the bottom 50 for the two-year period. On the flip side, Representative Howard McKeon, a Republican from California, scored $526,600 to lead the House in defense contributions. He voted, of course, against the bill. Of the 26 House members who voted and did not receive any defense financing, 16 voted for the Amash Amendment, in other words, to end the NSA wiretapping. House Speaker John Boehner, Republican of Ohio, voted against the measure. He is ranked 15th in defense earnings with a $131,000 take. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi also voted against ending the NSA spying on Americans. She received $47,000 from defense firms over the two-year period. Direct opponents on the right and left, Democrat and Republican, and yet they both voted for those who gave them the most money. We have a broken country. Welcome back to Shattering This. During the commercial break, Scott, our producer, sent me a quick snippet on an article that was talking about an interview that Rand Paul had on Fox News. He was asked about the sequester cuts, which the senator said will be a yawn. So he's not very excited about the discussions on sequester. And so this is Greta Van Skirin. She asked him about his own ideas on budget cuts, and he referred to his proposal to cut back foreign aid by about half. Now, but for me, I would cut it back to zero because we can't afford it. We are bankrupt. When you are bankrupt, you don't pay out money to other countries. We need to realize that we're broke. But anyway, he wants to cut it in half. I guess that's a good start. And then Greta asked him, well, I think there is some argument that the foreign aid has been effective. So she said, you know, what countries would you cut it from? And he said, well, you know, a lot of foreign aid has been stolen over the years. The Mubarak family in Egypt became very wealthy off the foreign aid. Well, if you want to look at the worst case, it would be Yasser Arafat. He died with $1 billion in his bank account, never worked a day in his life. All from skimming. Most foreign aid that is provided by the United States is skimmed. You know, that we provide hundreds of billions of dollars to the Afghan government and the Karzai family, and their relatives are the beneficiaries of it. They become fabulously wealthy. That's what happens with most foreign aid. He says, well, you know, they use the Mubarak family. He says, the end, when people were rioting in the streets and protesting Mubarak's rule and protesting his martial law, he sprayed them with tear gas that he bought with our foreign aid. So I don't think the foreign aid has necessarily endeared us to the Egyptians that were rioting against Mubarak. But what I would say is that I would start by cutting foreign aid to countries that are burning our flag and chanting death to America, countries that really don't really seem to be acting like our allies. Well, you know, the reality is that then you'd have to stop all foreign aid to every Islamic country in the world. You couldn't provide aid to the Syrians. The rebels want us dead. You can't provide foreign aid to the mythical people known as the Palestinians. They're chanting death to America. You can't provide foreign aid to Iraq or Afghanistan. They want to kill us. Same thing is true in Egypt and Libya. Pretty soon, there's really no place to provide money that can be given to those that actually think worse. Well, look at Pakistan. But, you know, why do we do it? You know, Secretary of State's in Pakistan today. He arrived with a pledge of $7 billion more dollars approved by the U.S. Senate. We're trying to buy friendship? I mean, is that extortion, or is it just we're so pathetic, we're so desperate, we're so hated around the world that the only way that we can buy lip service that says, oh, yeah, we'll tolerate you, is to bribe it? Because they, being an Islamic government, the Pakistani economy is in the gutter, and that the United States is the largest donor to nation to Pakistan. So even though they hate us, they'll welcome the Secretary of State so long as he comes bringing money. You know, both sides in the Mubarak-Morsi debate hate us. The Muslim Brotherhood, as well as the secularists that supported this current military coup. We're not endearing ourselves to anyone. All we're doing is making fools of ourselves and bankrupting the country.
We're being used. We're being used.
We're using ourselves.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, we're putting ourselves in a situation where we're just being used.
Yeah, and we ought not think that this is it's a good, charitable, kind, generous thing to do. You know, supplying weapons to the Pakistanis and to the Egyptians and to the Libyans, this is what we do, which is done with our money, and to the Syrians, that is not a humanitarian effort. It again gets right down to when you know what we're doing and how we're doing it and why we're doing it, the more you know about the behavior of the U.S. government, the more reprehensible you recognize it is, and the less you'd be willing to support it. By the way, the very government, this military coup that has taken over Egypt, last week they shot 100 people dead. You know, the general is saying, I want you to protest if you're in favor of us, but if you're opposed to us, I forbid you to protest, and I'm going to have the army now shoot our own citizens. Killed 100, wounded 1,500 in one protest. Our money is certainly buying a good thing there, isn't it?